The following program has been furnished and paid by Nathan P. Ross, CPA, and KSEV is not responsible for its content or the products or services offered.
Welcome to the Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, a show that helps you learn how planners can generate significantly more wealth now. Nathan will answer your questions about business or personal finance, or how to increase current cash flows and generate retirement savings to make sure you're on the right path, and so much more. Whatever your financial goal, Nathan can get you there faster. And now, here's your host, Nathan Ross.
Welcome to this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. Thank you for joining us. And before we get started, I wanted to remind you that you always want to check with your existing advisors before you try to implement something that you may hear us discuss on the show, whether it's tax related or real estate related or maybe legal, like an entity type, perhaps. You want to talk to people that are already aware of your unique facts and circumstances. And if you don't have existing advisors that understand private partnership, real estate, taxation rules, and planning strategies, or you don't have anyone to consult with respect to retirement plan taxation and how to use or access those funds to invest in real estate, including private partnership syndications, and perhaps you're looking to avoid as much tax as possible as you get to retirement. And in fact, I may have time today to talk about some other retirement plan issues and involving the cost of retirement and where you might find some better outcomes if you don't think you have enough money to get through retirement. And I marvel at times about how different areas of the world have as good or better convenience as we have enjoyed in America, but for assorted reasons represent a better choice for many of us Americans. I think we'll have time. I'll talk a bit about that. In any event, if you don't have advisors currently that can consult with you and advise you on these matters, feel free to go to our website at beaplanner.com. That's BAPlanner.com, and you can go to the links at the top. The second one from the right says Forms, and if you'll go to the Forms page, you'll see three steps with a total of four forms. If you're self-employed or run a business, we'd like to get you to fill out that fourth one. It's a business tax profile, but otherwise, if you could fill out the first three, and you know, I understand if you don't want to take the time, but I'll also tell you, you know, we're constrained when we do talk to you, which you can book a call with us or schedule a call by going to the rightmost link on that page. We'll be limited in our responses if we're trying to help you answer a question about something we don't know what your specifics are. So we offer that phone call for free, and if you want to fully exploit the opportunity, I suggest you power through and fill out forms 2 and 3. I will acknowledge the first form is the most intensive. That said, it's maybe a 20-minute form if you have much investing already, and you don't have to get everything to the penny. I'm just looking for a wide range of estimates on, you know, what you've got already, and then, you know, that'll give us enough to where we can have that phone conversation with you if you'd like to schedule that. I think I want to get started today. There was an article, and by the way, I have not uploaded any new articles in a while. I apologize for that, but I tell you, time is a precious commodity these days on my end, and I made a list of some articles that I want to go back and put up, and I'll try to do so. I did get the video that I spoke about last Friday, not this past Friday, but Friday before, that David Swikert, the U.S. congressman from Arizona, has some really good up-to-the-minute analysis of the budget mess that we're in, including some content about the reconciliation process and what will have to happen with respect to the big, beautiful bill, which I don't think, you know, everybody agrees it's a big, beautiful bill. It's another disastrous spending plan. If it goes through like it is now, and I understand, I think even Elon Musk is beginning to understand the concept of getting something, anything that you can then manipulate later to get a desired outcome. And, you know, part of the problem the Republicans have is they've got such a narrow majority. It gives each member a certain amount of leverage with respect to the outcome. And so it's a delicate line they walk to make sure they don't lose the upper hand in terms of the majority, and yet they get a bill through the process. And I don't know what will happen by the time the Senate gets through punching that bill, because they don't see eye to eye with the House, which more or less passed what Trump wanted. And but you know, the reality is they're staring a disaster in the eyes on several fronts. And don't forget, we've still got a debt ceiling fight that's looming. I forget when that happens. I want to say, is it July or maybe September? Let me see here if I can see what that month is. Let's see here. Well, it was suspended to January 1st, 2025 initially, and then the ability to use the extraordinary measures to manage the debt limit currently will be exhausted in August or September of 2025. So that's if the debt ceiling is not raised or suspended again. And as you know, or if you don't know, you should know, our bond rating or debt rating was just reduced. I can't remember if it was Moody's or which of the services it was. It got surprisingly little press. I'm amazed at how, compared to the first time this happened, more than a couple years ago, it got very little press that we got downgraded again. And I don't remember whether it went, I don't think it went below an A or whatever the lowest A rating is, maybe A minus. But, you know, that cost us a lot of extra money. Every time it goes down, that ends up costing us additional basis points, typically, on the interest rates that the next auction that the government does, the Treasury, continue to raise debt. Because you understand, and if you don't, it may come as a surprise to you that we're currently borrowing, I believe it's $6 billion, somewhere between $6 and $8 billion a day. A day. That's what we're borrowing to fund the current, I hesitate to call it a budget. I think it's another continuation bill, an omnibus bill is what we're currently operating under. I don't think we've actually had a budget now in many years. It just keeps getting kicked down the road, and these continuing resolutions are what actually validate or authorize the spending. But bottom line is, if we don't do something and fast, our debt will get downgraded again. The cost of us borrowing will continue to go up. We're not far. We're probably less than 4 years at this point, or right at 4 years, of having expended the remaining portion of the discretionary spending that takes place under the current budget. And by discretionary, I mean we can argue about how we're going to spend it. It's not mandated. Like most of the budget's mandated. It's Social Security, it's Medicare, it's indexing on those items, it's, you know, government retirement benefits, government health care to the employees that the government has had for many years. It's things that you really can't say, oh, well, we need to cut that 30% this year. No, you can't. It's statutorily mandated, and we're down to a very small piece of the overall $7 trillion that we spend every year. We raise in tax collections $5 trillion. We're spending $7 trillion. Therein lies the problem. That's that $2 trillion is what we are borrowing each and every day. And it's, I mean, total for the year, but it's a staggering amount of money. And when you think about our security risk and who holds that debt, a lot of it's held by company or countries that may not really be our friends. You know, China has a big chunk of that, and there's other countries who buy our debt. And it is rather remarkable, just to show you how bad off the rest of the world is that they look at the U.S. dollar, they still look at the U.S. dollar as being a place that they want to have currency, some of our currency. You know, they delineate or denominate assorted trading platforms and other investments with the U.S. dollar. And we really shouldn't take that for granted, that that will always be the case. And I'll tell you, when it's no longer the case, we got some major problems in terms of what it truly is going to cost us to borrow. And the debt service will go up fairly dramatically, and it'll be a different, well, literally a different world, because the rest of the world, or most of the rest of the world, is going to be in a world of hurts as well. Let's go ahead and take our first break, and we will circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan@npross.com. That's Nathan@npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Is it easy? No, it ain't. Can I fix it? No, I can't. Well, I sure ain't gonna take it lying down. Will I make it? Maybe so. Will I give up? Oh, no. I'll be fighting till I'm 6 feet underground. I'm gonna woman up and take it like a man. I'm gonna buckle up, be tough enough.
Okay, welcome back to the second segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA. And I had a couple articles that I mentioned I wanted to get to. One is that, let's see, this is in Globe Street from, what, yesterday, I guess, one of the newest articles. Came across my radar. It says apartment occupancy has been trending up across all price points over the past year, with the highest growth coming from the priciest asset class, according to RealPage, which is a white paper commercial real estate research group. Says Class A, B, and C units all reported year-over-year occupancy gains during the month of May, with stabilized Class A apartments standing out, hitting occupancy of 95.7. Now, again, these are averages. This is what I warn you about from time to time, is that none of us are average. We're all actual or standard. So depending on the market you're looking at, you want to drill down and get some more localized data, which is what we do. We track, it's somewhere around 20 markets, and we look at assorted attributes in that market. You know, it's not just the occupancy, it's the average rental growth rate, it's the average rent per unit, it's the number of new units that are in the pipeline to be delivered within the next year, I believe it is. Look at the number of permits that have been let. Look at the concession rates in given markets and submarkets. A lot of the info we get is down to the submarket. And so it gives us a view into the trends that we might not get otherwise, or we might get incorrect information if you are simply looking at the pro forma data that a syndicator provides when they're trying to raise money. And so we like to just confirm that we're not being told something that's blatantly incorrect. I'm not going to say it's not true, just not might not be correct. But in any event, back to this article, the Class A apartment group stood out, hitting occupancy of 95.7, the highest rate for the product class since June of 22. That's almost 3 years ago. At that level, the higher tier occupancy is still slightly below Class B's, which stood at 95.8 in May, but above Class C occupancy, which was at 95.6. So all three classes were pretty good. A's, the Class A buildings climbed 170 basis points year over year, compared with 150 basis point increase in Class B and 140 basis point increases in Class C. I think all of those results, when you look at where we were 3 years ago, this is welcome news. And of course, again, it's averages, okay? So I'm sure without even knowing, there's some markets where it's down. Could be a lot. There's others where it's up a lot. So, you know, the average is what this is reporting. The surge in higher tier apartment occupancy comes against the backdrop of a record-setting wave of new supply. Here we go again, right? Speaking of 3 years ago, with more than 400,000 new multifamily units delivered nationwide in 2023, the highest annual total in more than three decades, according to Yardi Matrix, which is also another data source, white paper. Yardi also makes some of the leading, or produces some of the leading accounting software, operations software for multifamily properties. They do did a joint study with CBRE, I believe it's Coldwell Banker Real Estate, if I remember right. Despite this influx, absorption has remained robust, particularly in the Sun Belt markets and major metros, reflecting strong underlying demand. By the way, CBRE was Coldwell Banker Richard Ellis. I don't know why my brain, I'm drinking my green tea. I'm not sure how my memory let that slip. But you know, that's what green tea does. A couple things. It helps your memory, supposedly. I'm questioning that now. And it drives away cancer cells. So if you're not drinking the green tea, add it to your list. It won't hurt you, and it may help you. Despite this influx, absorption has remained robust, particularly in Sun Belt markets and major metros. I'll tell you what, when we're on the break, I'm going to pull up one of our sources and check the absorption in some of our areas that we're more familiar with than others, like Houston, Dallas, Austin, San Antonio, etc., and see if that's true. Let's see. Major metros reflecting strong underlying demand. Industry analysts attribute much of this demand to persistent affordability challenges in the for sale housing market, and challenges in the for sale housing market, which I would agree with that. I've watched San Antonio a lot lately, and boy, it's been a tough market. It may be starting to thaw out now, but it's still a difficult lift for people trying to sell and people trying to buy. Elevated mortgage rates and home prices have kept many would-be buyers in the rental pool, a trend highlighted in late 2023 by the National Multifamily Housing Council and the National Apartment Association. Well, it's not just them. The rent-to-buy index that Florida Atlantic University created has shown it's better to rent than buy in most metro markets across the country, and it will be for quite a while. So, you know, I always question the agenda when it's somebody like the National Multifamily Housing Council or the National Apartment Association. What do you think they're going to suggest the data shows? And as you know, we can use data to make almost any argument that, you know, we care to. Statistics, what is it? Lies and more lies, basically, when you can twist statistics to fit your agenda. Continuing on, while occupancy has risen, net growth has moderated from the double-digit gains seen in 2021 and 2022. As of late 2023 and early 2024, annual rent growth for Class A properties slowed to around 2.3%, or 2.23%, I'm sorry, up to 3% is the way to look at that, down from over 10% in previous years. So it's not back to where we were in terms of the growth, even though the occupancy is higher. And I'll tell you, without even looking yet, oh, well, here comes their discussion of concessions. I'm sure they're getting ready to tell us about how much concession is playing into this scenario. But in any event, higher end, the current status has made higher end units more accessible to renters who previously opted for Class B or C units, according to Yardi Matrix. And of course, this is what's happened historically. Every time we have, I go back to the mid 80s and I saw this. And then it happened again, 2009-10, that time frame. But in any event, this moderation, combined with widespread leasing concessions such as multiple months of free rent or waived fees, essentially in high supply markets like Austin and Atlanta, has helped fill the Class A units quickly, even as it puts downward pressure on effective rents, RealPage and CoStar reported in the fourth quarter of 2023. That would make sense. The reversal of pre-pandemic occupancy patterns signals a structural shift in renter preferences and market fundamentals, possibly influenced by changes in household information and remote work. Migration to secondary and tertiary markets accelerated by the pandemic has also supported higher occupancy in new upscale developments, as documented by the U.S. Census Bureau and assorted industry moving reports throughout 2023. And here's the important part. Looking ahead, analysts caution that the record-breaking construction pipeline, especially in the luxury segment, could eventually outpace demand, leading to a softer occupancy and rent growth in the coming years. No doubt is what I would say. For now, however, absorption remains healthy, and occupancy rates across all apartment classes are outperforming their historical averages. Well, we'll see about that. And let's... not yet. I was going to say, let's take a break and I'll pull that up. Just looking at a couple other headlines. Renter default continues to be a critical challenge. There's a report by the Guarantors. I'm not familiar with that group. Probably another white paper research group, based on a survey of 400 plus multifamily professionals, reveals key trends, economic drivers, and mitigation gaps to help build resilience in 2025. That all sounds good, but the reality is when you're flooding the market with 400,000 new units coming into the pipeline, and we'll see what it looks like on our report when I pull it up here as to what the permit situation is in a couple key markets. Let's see. I was thinking, I've got an article, and I may not be able to put my hands on it till this coming Friday show, but the value of small apartments, that'd be the, excuse me, the sales value has gone up. It's the priciest class now in terms of the growth rate or the increase, which is interesting. And, you know, we talk about the small apartment space from time to time. I'm a big fan of it. You know, I own an 8-unit property in San Antonio, and I'll suggest to you, you know, the small apartment market is one where you don't necessarily have to hit a grand slam to get a single, which is what you have to do with many of the larger properties that are being syndicated by syndicators these days that are taking an ever-increasing chunk of the cream, if you will, out of the deal. And I've railed about this for a while now on the air, and I'll still tell you, you know, look at what we've just gone through. Look at the syndicators that had to give properties back to the lender, and ask them, how much did you give back to your investors? I haven't seen that once. Now, maybe it's happened, and if it has, if you're a syndicator, please connect with me. I'd love to have you on the air and discuss with you how you structured the give back. I've seen a couple of attempts to not really directly give anything back, but I've seen some syndicators that have given interest in other deals that may not really be deals at all. It's too early to tell, and I'm suspicious that there's any value in that. And, you know, the reality is that syndicators walked away with fees, and unless they had agreements in the loan agreements that they defaulted on to claw back some of those fees, they basically kept the fees, whereas your retirement money or your other capital that you had in a transaction is gone. You won't be getting that back. And, you know, I'm still looking at transactions this year, the balance of this year. It's expected to be the high watermark on foreclosures or on property givebacks, if you will. But in any event, well, let's go ahead and take the last break for this week's show, and we'll circle back momentarily with more of this week's Be a Planner show with Nathan Ross, CPA.
People always coming up to me and asking, what's your secret? With all you do, your attitude just seems to be so good. How do you keep it? Well, I'm not the Dalai Lama, but I'll try to offer up a few words of advice. You better get to living, giving. Don't forget to throw in.
Hey, if you'd like to contact Nathan for questions during the show today or during the week, you can text him at 713-782-1900. That's 713-782-1900. Or you can send an email to Nathan at npross.com. That's Nathan at npross.com.
BeAPlanner.com wants to ask you, when's the last time your tax pro called with a way to save you taxes? Seriously, do you want to work with a planner or a reporter? A planner knows which tax code sections are the best wealth accumulation tools. Less tax, more profit. Learn more at BeAPlanner.com. The Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross.
Like the song, Bobby McGee. I'm just longing to be free. Take me where I want to be. Big dreams and big dreams. And there are many just like me.
With big dreams and faded jeans.
Big dreams.
Big dreams.
Big dreams and faded jeans. Oh, 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 I'm just longing.
Okay, welcome back. The final segment of this week's Be A Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA, and I was talking just a little bit about the valuation analysis on small apartment buildings versus large apartments, and I'll try to dig that article up and have more detail, but I'm going to suggest to you that unless or until things change in the large apartment market on these syndications that you see, you really have to look carefully out of the deals that you're looking at how much the model has changed on syndicator compensation. And I'm going to suggest to you that unless there's a significant downside protection for your money, you really should think twice about who you're putting your money with. And, you know, it's a painful realization when you realize how, you know, the difference in the way the deals are marketed and the reality a year, 2 years later, if the assumption set, the debt structure, the debt structure's been one of the biggest variables in the recent past that have gone astray. And, of course, it's not just the debt structure. You've got, I mean, the interest rates being the key component of that. But you've got insurance costs have escalated significantly. Property taxes escalated significantly. And then, again, as we were mentioning earlier, you had an incredible volume of new competing units coming into the markets and submarkets that you may have been invested in. And that puts a lot of pressure on the lead partners to really understand or have understood what was coming. And unfortunately, a lot of them didn't. And I'm not even sure the ones that are still operating didn't do it by mistake. If they overcapitalized, I guess looking back, they look good. Whereas looking at it from the front end, they probably had no idea they were overcapitalizing. They were just doing what they normally do, which is take in enough money to immediately start paying distributions, regardless of how the property is progressing. And that's another red flag in terms of what we look for when we're trying to ascertain whether a deal is a reasonably structured deal. And I would suggest to you, you know, the ability to raise capital later through cash calls is something that most partners don't want to count on, because they know the human nature is to try to avoid putting good money after bad. And I get that, but I would also tell you, you know, the syndicator should have a deep enough balance sheet to where they can sustain some change over the coming months and years, and be able to go back to the debt market if need be, and borrow another tranche of money or go to their partners. But in any event, let's see, there was a couple other articles that I wanted to touch on. Well, I don't see the one I was searching for. I know that the build-to-rent space, you may have looked at some transactions in that space over the next or over the last 3 years. It seemed like every time I turned around, I was seeing a new syndication, and apparently the demand has really gone up in that space as well. And that makes sense because, again, if you can't qualify to buy and you don't really seek out the apartment lifestyle, well, then you've got a new class of real estate that didn't exist. You know, if you back up 10 years ago, there was no build-to-rent type product out there. And now there's, I don't know how many units, but there's a lot of units that have come into the marketplace, and they basically look like a typical subdivision. It's just the difference is people aren't buying those residences. They're renting them from typically corporate owners or investors like I work with that put their money together as a group to invest in the build-to-rent space. And you know, I think the ability for people to have a home without incurring the investment cost of a home, again, check out the Florida Atlantic University rent versus buy index. You know, there's an argument to rent your home, just like there's an argument to rent an apartment. And in any event, let's see here. I think this may be the article that I was looking for. Jamie Dimon, the Chase CEO, has, let's see, where was he speaking, or what was he doing, where he talked about the coming economic deterioration. He said that, I guess it was yesterday, speaking at a company conference, well, it was June 10th, I'm sorry. Dimon told the audience, "I think there's a chance real numbers will deteriorate soon. Employment will come down a little bit. Inflation will go up a little bit. Hopefully, just a little bit," quote, unquote, is what he's thinking. And Dimon is very often correct on his predictions. I hope he's, well, I don't know. There's a certain amount of change that's expected. The problem we've got, frankly, is the bond market is starting to dictate our budget because there's so much of our economy that's going into the interest debt service on bonds, and it's only going to become more so the case. And let's see, I think I found a summary of that article. Let me look at it here and see if this will give us. Fox Business has let's see, J.P. Morgan CEO Jamie Dimon warns economic condition. Yeah, this is the article. Let me just scan this and see if there's anything that directly applies to commercial real estate and the multifamily business. He says the economy's soft landing would probably look weaker as conditions deteriorate. Employment will come down a little bit. Same quote as the other article I read. Let's keep going here. He also raised concerns regarding private credit markets if a recession materializes, saying that banks face different risk in that sector than investors, and the current conditions in the sector have made private credit less attractive. Do I think that now is a good time to buy credit if I was a fund manager? No, Diamond said. I wouldn't be buying credit today at these prices and those spreads. So let's see. Back in April, he made the point that a recession is likely an outcome for the economy. That hadn't materialized. Last month, Diamond said in a Bloomberg interview that a recession remained a possibility after the White House delayed and pared back some of its tariff plans to accommodate regulations. And so I don't know. I suspect, you know, Diamond, well, again, I'm going to say the savings, the lack of savings, which will keep the interest rates up, is probably our biggest fear. I don't know that tariffs are. I know there was a lot of talk that the tariffs would drive us into a recession. That hasn't happened. Doesn't really look like it will. And I don't see Diamond saying that. And if you'll recall, most of the economists on the left, if you can put them in categories, there was a lot of name brand economists saying that, you know, we were going to have significant recession and inflation due to the tariffs. And I don't know. I know we're not anywhere near through the end or the finish line on tariffs, but it appears thus far that we're doing better than we expected. Let me tell you what, while I'm on Fox, let me take a look at the debt clock, because Fox does a good job of tracking that as well. And it's been a while since I've looked at their numbers. Let's see. Yeah, they've got an article about Illinois' debt clock. This article is, let's see, this, well, this goes back too far. Here's the article I was looking for. The National Debt Tracker. American taxpayers are now on the hook for $36,214,000,000. It's actually more than that. We looked at that, I believe it was on the show yesterday, and it's right at, it's coming up on $37 trillion. This article on Fox, this is from June 12th, had it at $34,214,000. But anyway, we won't get off into the debt clock. We understand it's bad. We understand that something, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things, probably. It's less spending. It's tariff collections. It's monetization of U.S. assets. It's probably some tax increases. And, you know, I would tell you that, you know, the combination of all the above is going to have to be dramatic to actually make a difference. And, you know, I guess I should have added the Doge cuts to that list. I don't think they're going to be as significant as we were hoping. On the other hand, they are, to a large extent, repetitive in nature. You know, from if you cut some of the stuff that's been cut thus far, it would have a year-on-year effect, certainly. So, in any event, I think that it would be interesting if we got a kick in the economy that actually created a significant increase in GDP, because that's the one thing that would help immensely, is if we could raise GDP. And of course, that, you know, there's no magic button to push to do that. So anyway, I'm going to continue to recommend, if you've got pre-tax retirement funds, you move at a reasonably good speed to get those funds over to a Roth. I think that with the Trump administration, we won't worry too much about taxes going up for a few years. On the other hand, you should worry about us running out of the remaining discretionary portion of the U.S. budget. That is going to happen 2028, 29, or 30 at the latest. And that's going to create havoc like even a tax increase would likely not. I mean, tax increase isn't going to be good. It's going to hamper the economy. But when you look at what the inability to sell treasury bills is going to cause, it's dramatic. And you can't just go print more money. I mean, you can, but that's not going to have the effect we want. That's going to be like a vortex, you know, in a toilet going down the drain, because the increases in, I'm going to call it fake money, will cause inflation to skyrocket. And, you know, the debt service on the bonds that you are able to sell will be off the charts. So, you know, in any event, I'm going to suggest to you, get your money into Roth so that at least as the taxes go up, you'll be able to control how much hits your pocketbook. And think about some of the zero tax mass strategies paired with real estate private partnership syndications. And there's no more efficient way to make that jump from pre-tax over to after-tax. So we're at the end of the show once again. Thank you for joining in, and we will return this coming Friday at 11 a.m. right here on AM 700 KSEV, the voice of Texas. Thank you for listening.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week for another edition of Be a Planner Show with Nathan Ross, CPA.